Hello, I'm Jamie Poisson.
Hello, hi. I hear you okay.
This is Najla Shawa. She's in Gaza. As we were setting up, we heard some buzzing in the background. I just want to double check with our producer, Derek, to make sure that you sound okay. Derek, how's everything going? And Najla says that sound was...
drones. That's drones.
Wow.
Yes.
Can you tell us more about that?
Drones are part of our kind of every minute. They don't stop, basically.
So these drones that she's talking about, these are part of the arsenal that Israel is using in its airstrikes on Gaza. The airstrikes are in response to thousands of rockets fired by Hamas and other militant groups, which, as of Wednesday night, have killed 12 Israelis, including a 5-year-old boy and a 16-year-old girl. Rockets have also damaged houses and buildings, mainly in central and southern Israel. But the biggest toll of this war is being felt in Gaza. Israeli airstrikes have killed at least 227 people in the territory. They include 64 children and 38 women. The UN says 52,000 people are now displaced, and that nearly 450 buildings have been destroyed or badly damaged. They include several high-rise towers that have been leveled to the ground. Israel says Hamas is operating inside these buildings, and that by conducting their operations in densely populated areas, Hamas is using civilians as human shields. Today, a look at what life is like right now for two people in Gaza. Starting with Najla, a humanitarian worker and mother of two. Najla, can you describe what your daily life has been like over the last 10 days since the airstrikes began?
Mainly what's been happening, it's airstrikes from fighter jets, which, you know, once you hear them coming, you're like, okay, you hold your breath, then you go to the corridor to see what's going to come next, or you hear the missile coming from it, and it walks, and it takes a few seconds until it hits, and these are the, like, worst moments. And it's so frequent, like, it's every day, without any exaggeration. Every day, every hour, you hear something like that. Now, beyond all that, you see there are little, in comparison or in relative terms, that, like, little explosions here and there where you try to cope, where you don't hear them. You act as if you're not hearing them anymore, like what's happening right now. It's far, we're fine, the kids are watching TV. And so I'm, like, trying to explain to my daughters. I mean, I have two daughters, one is 6 years old and one is 4. And I had to explain this time because we had situations similar before, but they were like shorter periods, like for a day or two, and then they would be asleep and they wouldn't tell, they couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. Or we could tell them it's thunder or it's fireworks or it's just nothing or just completely ignore. But this time the biggest challenge was, like, okay, my daughter Zainab, she is now aware. She's asking questions. She's terrified. It's not that she's asking questions. She's terrified. She's, like, screaming because of bombings that took place during noontime while she was, I think, just finishing lunch or something. And she saw the smoke from the window. It wasn't very, very close to us, but it was very visible.
Wow.
And so I was trying to comfort her that, no, look, it's far, it's nothing. We're going to be fine. And then I was like, no, mama, it's very loud. I was like, yes, they're going to be loud. And this might continue, it might happen again, but we will be fine. And then I would just distract the conversation by doing something else, you know. And it's very hard because we're put in the situation, I'm put personally, I mean, as a mother, basically, to not, I don't want her to understand so much, too much, because it would really affect her. And I could see really the fear in her eyes in the past few days, especially at night. And when she screamed just very, very naturally and suddenly, like, I don't want my house to be bombed. Now she, because it's really constant, like while I'm speaking, I heard like 5 or 6 bombings in different places.
You can hear bombings right now?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, I could count, I don't know, count. I was like, that's one here, you heard.
Yeah, I did.
So it's, I'm glad a little bit that compared to the overall picture and given the overall picture, they are coping with some level of that. And of course, I don't know what's happening inside them. I don't know how traumatized they are so far, but looking at how much suffering and destruction there is around me, I'm grateful. I hope we can manage to survive this with as little damage as possible. Being a Palestinian, and maybe more specifically in Gaza, but being a Palestinian in general you grew up with different kind of traumas like that we don't even recognize anymore as trauma. Like I've been in 2014 war. I was pregnant with her. I really suffered from great amount of anxiety because it was so dangerous where we were living, and we had to evacuate, and I was trying to protect her as much as possible from my own fear. I was so afraid that I want to keep calm, but it was impossible. And she stopped moving for like almost 2 days. And so like panic goes to more panic. It's so hard to control. Now I have to explain to her this war, and it's like a new chapter in my life.
Yeah, Najla, I can't imagine. It's unimaginable. We talked about your children, and you seem to be so concentrated on trying to give them some sort of normalcy. Can I ask you how you're doing? How are you trying to cope through this?
I really have no time or chance or room to maybe, I don't know, reflect on that. But we are emotionally, mentally, physically drained. And we try each day to kind of recharge our energy, our morale, to continue, because it's getting so bleak. After some initial news of like possibility to reach ceasefire, now we're not even in that point, and it's sad. And the biggest concern is now, how can we continue? How can we stay resilient? How can we really remain contained and just sustain ourselves in the coming days, or I don't know how many more, how much more time.
Najla, do you feel like you have anywhere even somewhat safe to go?
Honestly, I live in an independent home, and this is already one criteria that that helps in such a situation, because what many people are suffering from who are living in big buildings, in high-rise building where they had to evacuate or had their buildings bombed. That's the most terrifying thing about this war and the past one. And I'm even super lucky. I think I'm one of the very, very few who have like a basement. So since like 4 nights, we are sleeping in the basement, because around this time when it starts to close to be dark, tension really rises so much, like you feel it so much in the air even. And nights are harsh. Very unpredictable, like there are always surprises. A few nights ago started with this kind of pattern of hitting roads very hard with huge bombs, as if it's a huge hammer and you have like the whole earth in like a ball, you know, when you hold it in your hand like a ball, and then a hammer that keeps banging. That's how it feels. And I'm so like, with each one, honestly, with each bang, there's like no time to breathe. There's a next one and a next one and another. So they do like 50 of them.
How are your children reacting at night? What do they do?
So the older one, when things are loud, she puts her fingers in her ears, and then at night when it gets more difficult, she asks us to put our hands on her ears. So and she says it like she's a press harder. Mama, I don't want to hear this, and she cries, but she responds to our comforting kind of remarks, or you know, when we try to hold her or hug her and say it's gonna be okay. But listen, I mean, there were a few times which were horrible, like we were like holding the two of them, and they were like basically not like. They couldn't leave us for just, you know, they were so close, and we were in the corridor, and we were, the house was shaking, and the windows, the glass was shaking. You can even feel the air, the pressure of the air in the house, and the curtains moving. So it's not easy, you know, and I was terrified. So I tell her that, It's not nice, I know, but it's gonna pass. It's gonna go, Mama. It's gonna end. Mm. Let's count. I tell her, let's count them. Let's count the bombs. So yeah, oh, 5, 6, 7. Oh my God, how many are they? So that you're gonna tell your aunt when you speak to her. How many did you hear? And then we try to make it as a game, but it's so hard. Right.
Natalie, I don't want this to sound like a really like obvious question, but what do you need to happen right now?
We want a fair solution to our problem. Because even if there's a ceasefire today, which I, of course, want immediately, but without a fair solution, our life will continue to be miserable in Gaza, and the suffering will not be heard or addressed, because we will not be making it to the news. And this what hurts more than the war itself, because Palestinians have been treated so unfairly for many decades, and the whole politics of it, we all know, and I don't want to go there. It just has been so unfair, and we just want people to understand the real situation, to understand why is this happening, to understand this side of the story. And once they open their minds and hearts, they would understand that things will not be resolved with ignoring Palestinian rights.
Najla, I really want to thank you for this conversation, for speaking with
You're
me.
Welcome.
I hope that you and your children and your husband, I hope that you'll be safe.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
The second person that I want you to meet today is Dr. Mohammed Abu Mugaseb. He's the deputy medical coordinator for MSF, or Doctors Without Borders, in Gaza. On Sunday, airstrikes damaged an MSF clinic in Gaza City. Can you describe what you saw on Monday morning when you arrived at the MSF clinic?
So I went that morning, and I was really shocked when I saw the neighborhood. Actually, this neighborhood was one of the most quiet neighborhoods in Gaza. It's, I mean, really nice to live even in.
Mm.
So everything was completely destroyed. The neighborhood was almost, I mean, it was really like a ghost town. I mean, with all these rebels buildings. And in front of the clinic, there was one strike, which led to a big hole. And the clinic was partially the wall damaged. The sterilization unit was out of the clinic, you know, the autoclave and the material and the room itself was almost collapsed. The waiting area was as well partially damaged. Thanks God that our team, and there was a watchman working during the night. He was safe. I mean, he was not injured. But this neighborhood at that day, I mean, there were around 40 people dead. I mean, majority of them are children and women. And there was two doctors as well who were as well dead in this night strike.
What does the rest of Gaza City look like right now?
It's a very touchy question. It's horrible. I mean, Gaza, it's under closure and siege since years, but there was life. I mean, there is still life, and it's an incredible resilience of this population here because they want to live and they want to enjoy. So, I mean, a few days ago before just the war, I mean, people were in the street, they were preparing because Ramadan was ending, as you know. They were planning to starting to buy for their kids new clothes, toys, and sweets. So, because they were preparing for the feast, Al Eid, and I mean, it was full of lights and colorful. And in one day, it's a ghost town. I mean, when you watch some movies like I'm a Legend and you see, you know, Will Smith walking the streets with same. I mean, there is no one in the street. You just find destroyed buildings from every 200 meters. You find a kind of main junction of the streets are bombed. I mean, it's horrible.
Dr. Mugaseb, from your perspective, how does the damage in this latest war compare to the damage you've seen in previous conflicts?
You know, I've been here with MSF and during the last three wars and even with the last big demonstration in 2018. And I remember that in 2018, when we spoke about the number of injured, I said to one of the journalists, I said, you know, the Great March is equal to the three wars, what I saw in the three wars. Now I'm saying that the 10 days is equal to the three wars plus the Great March demonstration. I mean, the destruction, the infrastructure is completely damaged. I mean, water, sanitation system is totally broken, and I can't say it because I have it at my home now. I mean, I have in front of my house the Lake of Victoria of sewage because the main sewage system was completely bombed. The situation, I mean, it's compared to the last 2014 war, the 50 days. I mean, it's even more than if you weigh it, it's totally different. No, this is worse. This is horrible.
Since the airstrike started last week, you and your colleagues at MSF have been providing support to hospitals. And can you tell me a little bit about how you're trying to help them?
So we, first of all, we contacted the hospitals to see what is the main shortage that they need. And mainly it was anesthesia drug, life-saving drugs, and some disposables. As well, we try to see in terms of human resources what we can help because there is lack of subspecialties in Gaza. We were planning to start bringing intensive care unit doctors, vascular, trauma surgeons. Unfortunately, we until now we couldn't have any kind of clearance from the Israeli side.
I just want to make sure I understood something that you just said. Did you say that you've been trying to bring in more medical teams into Gaza, but you haven't been able to?
No, we are not, and we are trying. And even yesterday, there was an ICU intensive care doctor was planning to enter Gaza, but unfortunately, the Israeli closed again the checkpoint.
Right. I'll just note that Israel says they closed the border crossing on Tuesday because a soldier accompanying the aid trucks at one of the crossings was lightly injured by a mortar bomb, and an Israeli spokesperson said they didn't open it Wednesday because militants again fired mortar shells at another crossing. Can you tell me what kind of injuries the hospitals are treating right now?
So they have head injuries mainly, lower extremity and upper extremity open fractures, some burn patients from the explosive, from the strikes. So they are treating, different type of injuries.
I know many of the injured are children.
Around 40% of all the injuries are children and women. Some of the children, they lost their, spinal injury, lost their limbs. Still some of them with head injury that could still unconscious. Some with burns with 70% total body surface. It's very critical. So there is some cases that I can confirm, but in general, it's around 40% women and children.
Where are you hearing that it's 40%? How do you know that it's 40%?
It's from all the data that it is released as well from the WHO here and from the Minister of Health and, of course, our contacts with the hospitals on a daily basis.
I should note, too, that the WHO says the airstrikes have damaged a total of 18 hospitals and clinics and destroyed Gaza's only coronavirus testing lab. And I also know that on top of that, Gaza has high numbers of COVID-19 cases right now. So given all of these factors, where are these new patients who have been wounded by airstrikes? Where are they going? Is there room for them in the hospitals?
Until now, they are able to cope. Until this moment, until today, they are able to cope with the number of patients that they are receiving. But as you mentioned, COVID-19 second wave was a few weeks ago. The peak was high in Gaza. We are very worried about the COVID situation in Gaza. According to the UN, 40,000 people are displaced in the schools. And in the schools, it's crowdedness, and it's very difficult to put measurements. So we are really concerned about COVID at the same time.
What do you need to happen right now?
Stop the military operation as soon as possible, now. And to give a chance to the humanitarian actors to enter Gaza to support medically, financially, whatever. The Gaza is suffering since long time of this kind of closure and this kind of wars. And I think with this COVID and with the recent 10 days, I think it will need years to overcome it.
Right, that's all for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening to Front Burner. Talk tomorrow.